Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Whenever and wherever you're listening to this podcast, you are very welcome. Welcome to Rugby News, the podcast about our town, our people. We'll kick off, as we like to do, with a roundup of local news, that's news local to rugby, with the help of the excellent local newspapers, the Rugby Observer and the Rugby Advertiser. In this week's show, podcast number 8, released on Friday the 10th of January, I'll share with you the local news from around Rugby Town, including how close Rugby College came to insolvency, Dobby's Garden Centre, are they closing, and Woolston flooding again. And then, in my weekly deep dive feature, I talk to Rob Sloan, the man behind the recent triumphant success that was the production of Dickens' A Christmas Carol at Rugby Theatre. A fascinating chat. And so, without further ado, here's our news. Warwickshire College Group has been saved from the brink of insolvency by a government bailout. The group, which teaches some 13,000 students at colleges in Lymington, Moreton Morrill, Rugby and Warwick, together with Evesham and Pershore in Worcestershire, received news just a week before Christmas that it would receive a financial support package from the Department for Education, the DfE. A DfE assessment of Warwickshire College Group revealed the extent of the financial crisis after the Board of Governors had become increasingly concerned about the financial fragility of the college and what would be required for the college to remain solvent. An external health check concluded, with no emergency support or loans, the college will run out of unrestricted cash during January 2025 and needs £1.7 million support. Warwickshire College Group had also asked the government for help to refinance the remainder of a £3 million bank loan, which it was in danger of defaulting on. Staffing costs were singled out as a major factor in Warwickshire College Group's financial difficulties. The group employs some 1,300 staff, the cost of which the report described as significantly above budget, accounting for more than 70% of the group's total income of £51.6 million in the last financial year. And the report also noted Warwickshire College Group's focus on repaying debts by relying on income surpluses and selling assets left it financially vulnerable. Plans to tackle the cash crisis are already in place, with a number of savings identified, together with plans to sell off its Malvern Hills campus and part of its Evesham campus. The Commissioner did praise new principal Sarah Jane Watkins' positive, joined-up approach to leadership and governance after taking up the job in September. And the assessment did conclude Warwickshire College Group should overcome its financial problems with careful management. The rumours are true. Dobby's Garden Centre near Rugby is closing at the end of January, but will reopen under a new owner. A spokesperson said the Straight Mile site and its staff would transfer to a new garden centre operator. Dobby's announced last September that they were launching a restructuring plan to build a strong platform for a return to sustainable profitability. Following the approval of the restructuring plan and discussions with the landlord, our rugby site will transfer to a new garden centre operator with colleagues at the end of January. Thank you to all our colleagues, customers and suppliers who have supported us during this ongoing process. Last weekend was so wet with rain and more rain. And at the height of it all, on Monday the 6th, Warwickshire firefighters dealt with 45 emergency calls and rescued 12 people from flood-related incidents across the county. And our thoughts go particularly to our local village of Woolston, which has been hit by flooding again. It's almost exactly a year since the village was cut off by floodwater for the first time in more than 20 years when Storm Henk wrought havoc. John Slinger, MP for Rugby, visited the village on Monday and said the area showed what a strong community it is, with people coming together to help one another in their time of need. He observed that clearly the management of the flood risk in this area is not working properly, given that this is the second flooding incident in a year. Some of the residents I spoke to have only moved back into their homes this summer. I will be taking up residents' concerns with the authorities and hope to raise some of the issues with ministers in the House of Commons. Now, I love a cliché as much as the next man, and this story is full of it. The papers reported that the chief executive of Rugby Borough Council is stepping down from her role. Mally Ketley has decided to take a career break, following 20 years of loyal service to the council in six different roles. She said, "After 20 years here at Rugby Borough Council, it's time to move on, and I'm looking forward to taking a break, spending more time with my family and exploring different opportunities. Starting out in a finance team leader position, I never imagined I would progress to chief financial officer and then chief executive officer in the same organisation, but I've always been well supported to progress my career, and I encourage all colleagues to take those opportunities when they come along." Ms. Ketley, who stepped into her leadership position just 2 weeks before the first COVID lockdown, was recognised in 2020 for her contribution to the community as part of West Midlands Employers' Everyday Heroes campaign. "Looking back over the years," she said, "I'm really proud of our many achievements and I look forward to seeing the continued success into the future." In the King's New Year's Honours list for 2025, we find 11 Warwickshire people recognised for their outstanding contributions to society, community or their area of work. Among the wonderful people honoured, we find Barbara Spybe from Rugby, who was awarded a BEM for her services to early years and childcare in her role as the manager of Clifton Playgroup in Rugby. Well, well done, Barbara. Well done. And also Olympic champion from Rugby, Lauren Henry, who was awarded an MBE for services to rowing. Lauren won a gold medal for Team GB in the women's quadruple sculls rowing event at the 2024 Olympics in Paris. Well done to you too, Lauren. Staff at the Clifton Cruisers Boatyard on the North Oxford Canal in Rugby are celebrating being crowned the best in the country. Clifton Cruisers was named best in Britain for the quality of its holidays on the water by staycation company Ho Seasons at its 18th annual awards ceremony at the Hilton Metropole in Birmingham. They were also named best on the canals, rivers and lochs, and won Boat of the Year for their narrowboat Rene, which scored an exceptional number of five-star customer ratings during the year. Rob Over, managing director at Clifton Cruisers, said, "Winning one award is great, but winning three in one night, including best in Britain, it's incredible. It's great to see our efforts being recognised. Well, well done, you guys. It would seem if you, dear listener, are looking to spend time on the water, it'd be worth you checking them out. Clifton Cruisers would be pleased to help you, I'm sure. So call them on 01788 543 570 and tell them you heard about them through the Rugby News podcast." New life has been breathed into a rugby town centre pub with positive feedback from customers. It's the Courthouse in North Street, and Abby Varghese, who has 17 years of experience in the hospitality industry, tells the papers he is raising the bar at his new establishment. Abby has successfully managed popular pubs in Kilsby and Harborough Magna, where he became a beloved figure among pub goers. He said, "The courthouse is embarking on a new chapter. We are committed to offering our patrons a unique blend of traditional and modern gastronomic excellence. He's making it his mission to maintain a high standard of service and wants people to cherish the establishment." Well, good luck to you, Abby. Have you made any New Year's resolutions yet? Well, whether you have or not, Warwickshire County Council are urging us to make more environmentally friendly pledges. Warwickshire's green pledges are now in their second year, and already this year, dozens of Warwickshire residents are committing to them online. Apparently, the four most common resolutions we make are doing more exercise, saving money, losing weight, and improving diet. The point is that you can do these things in different ways, but you can produce important co-benefits by thinking about the environment as well. For example, to do more exercise and save more money, you can choose active travel. For short journeys, that's less than 5 miles, you help your fitness and your wallet while reducing carbon emissions. And losing weight and improving your diet can be achieved through reducing the amount of red meat you eat, or even considering adopting a vegetarian or vegan diet, which are more sustainable and better for the environment. Making resolutions is one thing, keeping them throughout the year is quite another. Research has found that writing them down and sharing them with others increases the chances of you keeping to the commitment. So if you make resolutions, make them to benefit you and also the planet, and to help you stick to them, write them down. And why not share them? And you can make them green pledges by going to warwickshireclimateemergency.org.uk/greenpledges. You are listening to the Rugby News Podcast, where I draw together all the biggest stories from the last week from Rugby Town and all around, so you can hear them at your convenience, wherever and whenever you like, for free, every Friday, and with no distracting ads, all in about 20 minutes. You can listen while you're walking the dog, driving to work, or finishing off that ironing. If you like what you hear, be sure and follow Rugby News, that's all one word, on your usual podcast station, and tell your friends. Do tell your friends. If you like it, they'll like it too. Spread the word. Do spread the word. Thank you. Now, that was a roundup of the local news stories about our rugby town, and I am indebted to the excellent local papers, the Rugby Observer and the Rugby Advertiser, for all their help. And hey, for even more detail and even more news stories as they happen, go to their websites or follow them on their Facebook pages. OK, every week in the Rugby News Podcast, I take my trusty mic and I visit interesting places and chat with interesting people from around the town. People who are making a difference, adding to the uniqueness of this extraordinary place. This week, I invited Rob Sloan to share some of his thoughts. Regular listeners will know that I was involved with the December show at Rugby Theatre, A Christmas Carol. It was a sellout on all 10 shows, playing to over 2,500 delighted theatre-goers and hailed by many, if not all, as a huge success, an innovative, dazzling spectacle. Over the festive season, I managed to catch up with the writer and co-director of the new adaptation of the Dickens classic, Rob Sloan, and recorded our conversation. We spoke about what brought him to Rugby Town, his fascinations and frustrations about the place, and how the power of well-told stories may be one way to help build our pride in our Rugby Town. First, I asked him what attracted him to the place.
Yeah, so I moved to Rugby in 2005, and I came here because... it's always love, isn't it? It's the main reason why people do anything or move anywhere. Mm-hmm. My in-laws lived in Kilsby, so just outside Rugby, and we would travel here up from London probably once every 2 weeks. And so it was great fun to stay over on Friday night, Saturday night, And my wife's mum's an amazing cook, so have great food and loads of alcohol and have a great night. And then I think we've been renting in London for about 7 or 8 years, and we just happened to look at, oh, how much would it cost to move to Rugby? And just couldn't believe that you could get a house for, you know, 100 grand. But then you get the shock of, how much is the train fare?
Yeah.
But then it kind of sort of works out. So we moved in 2005, and things are all relative, aren't they? Because still, Rugby is still one of the cheapest places to live in the country, definitely. But I think, I know there are lots of things in the town that people can get down by, but there are so many other things to be really positive about. Like, as we've spoken many times, but you know, the creative side, the Rugby Theatre as a place, and not just the quality of the shows, but the types of shows they put on, I think is outstanding. And I think the great thing for me about Rugby is we know what the place is and we know what the place is about. I worked in Leamington for 15 years and that place is beautiful, but there's also quite a pretentious air about it.
Okay.
Whereas I think Rugby is more real, isn't it? We don't have anything to be proud of. You have to sort of search a bit to find the stuff that you think is great about the town and be proud of. Like I say, theatre, but...
His passion for the theatre and the process of storytelling are clear. And he's had many notable successes with Rugby Theatre in the last decade or so, including his original production of Romeo and Juliet, with one family speaking Shakespeare's words in English, the other family, a Polish family, speaking their lines in Polish. And the show was invited to play on the main stage at the RSC in Stratford, a memorable night. However, you have to find the heart within the story.
The thing that worked with Christmas Carol is, regardless of anything we brought to it, you know, you could take, let's remove everything we brought to it. You're starting with a brilliant story that everyone knows straight away. You mention Christmas Carol, people smile. Probably most people are thinking of the Muppets, but, you know, they smile straight away. Then, thankfully, I think we did write a great script, but we then found all the right people. We were lucky. I say it's not luck. I don't believe in luck. It is skill to find the right people, but to have all those people in Rugby, you know, and that's everyone from the cast to, as I've mentioned before, the engineers who did all the special effects. So, you know, we found Simon Smith, who was someone who was so passionate about inventing new things and creating things from his shed. He was able to make things that we would have an idea about. We'd discuss, oh, could we do this? Could we have 100 lanterns floating in the sky? And he would just go away and do it. So I suppose we were lucky enough to find all the different people, the Jay and Jenny who did all the costumes, James Grady who wrote the music, Joe Foote, well known in town she chose all the carols and then worked with James as MD. And they, I suppose, got seduced by the dream, you know, the vision of putting on a Christmas Carol. And I think because they were all individually brilliant and have got a track record of being brilliant, we all knew it was going to be a great production.
Hmm.
What we should say is that we should talk about the fact that what was new about it was In the Round Theatre working with Rugby Theatre.
Hmm.
So...
Well, tell us about In the Round Theatre, which is a pet project of yours for the last how many years?
Well, maybe it might be useful to begin by... Going back to the point of moving in 2005 to Rugby, one of the first things I did was find Rugby Theatre, found Rugby Theatre, went to it and looked at how to join. And I knew straight away I wanted to direct, but was then sort of hit by, oh, you can't direct until you've become a member and you've done this thing, done this course, done this. Anyway, eventually I direct, stuck with it, met some amazing people. That then progressed to becoming artistic director for four, nearly 5 years. But I'd always had this idea of setting up a youth group because I myself, when I was a teenager, made my best friends. I made those friends through a local youth theatre in Tunbridge. By this point, I'd stepped down as artistic director from Rugby Theatre because it was just too much with work and everything else. COVID hit. I, like many people, went on walks with Darren Pratt, fellow co-founder of In the Round Theatre. And we didn't really know this, but we discovered that we both had the passion for youth theatres because he had also been to one when he was in Rugby. So that's where we came up with the idea whilst out walking with a rucksack full of Stella pork pies. Very classy. Came up with the idea of, well, why don't we do it? And Jack, do you know what? It was actually Joe Foote, actually, that said to me, I said, I'd love to set up a youth theatre. And he said, well, why don't you just do it yourself? I was like, what, really? So that's when we started exploring that idea. So we set it up. And yes, there's a lot of work in setting up, but we realised it's actually quite easy. Like all those things that you fear, oh, insurance, how do you do that? We just phone up a company and they give you a quote and you accept it. It's literally that simple. Or how do you become a chaperone? Well, you just phone up the council and they tell you what you need to do and you do a bit of training and that's it. You know, it's, things were relatively simple. And it was, for both Darren and myself, it was so freeing because it was just us two being able to do all this stuff. And it's really important that in and around theatre, you know, there are many theatre groups that have sort of sprung up in and around rugby. But for, we're not a business. Neither Darren or I make any money out of it. We volunteer our time. And any money that the parents pay for their kids to go to the group, that goes, you know, purely towards rehearsal room hire, insurance, website, and occasionally we buy pizza for the gang. But it goes towards running costs. And we also, what's really important is that we have quite a few subsidised places as well. So if people join, but they are really struggling and they can't afford it, then we have subsidised places because it's money. I know we have to live in the real world, but money shouldn't be a barrier.
So yeah. how many children are there? Well, and what do you define as a child? How big, old are these people?
Well, we 13 to 18. The sweet spot is around 20, having 20 kids, because that's, we feel that works really well. We can manage that. Anytime we've gone over 20, it's been a bit chaotic. So we've just done, I say just, in September we did an audition process. And because there were so many brilliant kids, we've accepted 10 more. So now we're going up to 24. So we've done exactly what we said we shouldn't do and gone over the 20 threshold, and we've got 24.
And you'll find out if it was an error or in good time.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
But how do you measure success, and what would be the things that you think,
do you know what,
make it such?
I think one of the simple things that, you know, simple ways of measuring if it's a success or not is whether the kids come each week. And they do. They come back every single week. But that's, you know, originally I thought it'd be, the success would be kids going on and getting Hollywood parts, you know, in films, or being successful, or us putting on amazing plays. But it's not just being an actor, it's being, you know, going into the creative industry. Obviously in this area there's a massive industry of computer games, and I worked in that field a little bit for 12 years in Leamington, and my background was in drama, and drama helped me massively in that field, being able to design and create experiences. So people that come to In the Round, that don't necessarily have to go on and be an actor. They could be a game designer. They could be a coder. They could be an artist. They could be a work in film. They could work in anything that's, I suppose, any kind of entertainment media.
It also helps you as a human being, doesn't it, to be able to find emotions and define emotions.
Well, empathy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Understanding
somebody else.
Understanding, yeah, someone else's viewpoint. That's, I think that, and that's, as we've seen from social media, that's kind of feels like it's being lost, the idea of being able to empathise with someone else.
Mm. He's keen to find things to be proud of in the town, and it doesn't take much of a search to find that there are many stories about Rugby Town and its historic influence on the world. Whittle and the Jet, Unity Mitford, The Hologram, Woodbine Willie, Rupert Brooke, Lewis Carroll, many, many more. But to tell any of the stories in a captivating way, you must find a heart and an angle. The game of rugby, for instance, in 1823.
And I'd like to do a bit of research into that, about it was William Webb Ellis, wasn't it? He was the guy who picked up the ball and ran with it, which is a nice phrase. But was it out of defiance? Was he like, I'm fed up playing this stupid game, it's freezing cold, I'm just going to pick it up and run? Or was it, you know, I can't imagine it was a creative idea in his head where he said, I'm going to create a new sport, here we go. Yeah. It was out of a moment of passion, or he's just angry or peed off or annoyed with people or something. Or
taking a story of a place and telling it to people is the way. If we have aspirations for this place becoming a tourist attraction, and if we have a hope of saving what there is of the town centre, It's telling people all the stories. So they come to rugby, and they have thousands eventually. And some of them are interested in social history. Some of them are interested in military history, engineering, sport, da da da. Because what's Stratford got? Some bloke who wrote plays.
Yeah.
End of.
Do you know, I wonder whether it's because all these things, they're not very relatable. A jet engine. You have to pause and go, what? Oh, yeah, okay, that's used in a plane, right. And hologram. When have I seen a hologram? I don't know. How is that relevant?
I don't know. So then.
Yeah, but it's like a lot of it is... But you have to kind of work hard to get enthusiastic by it. And I think it's because we don't know the human story. Again, same thing with the rugby. If it was... If it was this idea that, yeah, there was this, like, delinquent kid who decided to stick his finger up at the establishment, so he picked up the ball, and then you've got an interesting story.
Yeah.
But it's something... Then it becomes something that we can emotionally connect with. Mm. When it's just a rugby ball on a shopping centre, it's nothing, is it? It's just... doesn't mean anything.
And here's an insight into finding the core of the main character...
What's the core thing about Scrooge? And I remember seeing or hearing when I was in the process of writing it, I knew about the idea of characters all have a want. They want something. They want to achieve something. And that's normally what the story is. That's what drives the story. It's what drives the conflict. Scrooge wants to be left alone. That's all he wants in the beginning of the play. But people keep bothering him. Charity workers turn up, as you know, as your charity worker number one. Charity workers turn up, Fred turns up, Bob asks for a day off, people won't leave him alone. So you get conflict. But then what I didn't know was the idea of need. So the character has something they need, but they don't know they need it until the end. So they go through the story having a want, I want to be left alone. And then there's a need, and the need, you could say, could be something like Scrooge needs to learn to love other people and love himself. You don't know you need it until, I mean, there's that cliched moment where Tiny Tim hands him the scarf and he goes, wow, a gift for me. And it's to be loved, isn't it? He's like, wow, oh my God. And that's a really cool thing, I think, in storytelling. Mm. That characters have a need, but they don't know they need it, and they won't find out till the end.
Want is the plot, need is the theme. Rob's always learning, developing, honing his storytelling skills. Useful if you're going to make an impact at Disney.
So I do work for Disney. I work, as you can imagine, there are many different areas at Disney, very different, many different teams. You've got the people that make the films, so studios. You've got the Disney Plus team. You've got the parks team, so Disney World, Disneyland, Disneyland Paris. And then you've got the team of people that look after all of the Lilo and Stitch pajamas or Kermit the Frog trainers or all the products. So whether they merchandise, yeah. So it could be T-shirts, pajamas, games, books, anything that's got watches, you know, anything that's got Disney, Marvel, Star Wars, Pixar, IP related to it. So it's quite a lot. But I work in the marketing team that promotes the brand of Disney. And then going down even smaller than that, I work in the creative team that makes the things. So it could be an event that's an immersive event that's promoting Mickey Mouse to the Gen Z audience. It could be... actually, I did do most things I do are interactive. They're kind of tech based, but I did work on one ad because it was a Kermit the Frog ad, and I'm a massive fan of the Muppets, so I got to work on a Kermit the Frog ad, which was amazing, and that was for a watch. So yeah, it's kind of within the marketing field, but it's the creative side, which is great. And it's, you know, normally you get a brief, same as theatre, you get a brief, something you want to communicate to an audience. So you have to understand what is that thing you want to communicate and who is that audience you're trying to communicate it to. And then you make something that's hopefully awesome. Mm. So it is brilliant. And I think I'm very lucky to be in this position. I don't believe in luck, do I? I shouldn't say that. But I am very grateful to be in this position. And do you know what? I think the directing, having done lots of directing at Rugby Theatre, has helped my job. Because one of the things I do in my job, which is quite crazy, is I direct, we do a Make-A-Wish show every year, and I direct the Marvel experience. Actually, last year I directed Marvel and Star Wars experiences, which is amazing. I never thought I'd say that out loud. Mm. But a lot of that is from the skills and the confidence gained from rugby theatre.
His energy is boundless. Always looking to learn more about the art and the science of storytelling on stage and screen, and finding ways to apply the lessons learned in new and old technologies. Always with a project on the go, another in the pipeline, searching for the essential truths inside the characters and sharing them with an audience. Well, I'll leave it to others to determine Rob's own wants and needs. All I know is it's an absolute thrill to work with him as he refines those skills. Storytelling. You know, I reckon that if we all knew more about all the amazing stories of this extraordinary town, and there are many, many more than just a bloke who wrote plays, we would have so much to be proud of. Well, thank you, Rob, for sharing your thoughts. I've been Simon for Rugby News, and until the next time, goodbye. Okay, we've pretty much reached the end of this podcast, and thank you so much for staying with it. I publish it once a week, every Friday morning, so if you click follow next to Rugby News, or one word, on any of the podcast platforms, you should get a notification when a new one drops, so make sure you do follow. As well as the news of Rugby's week, I always have a deep dive, an interview with someone in the local community who's making or trying to make a positive difference, trying to build our community, to enhance the profile of the town, to make us proud of rugby, our town, our people. So if you think of anyone that fits the bill, let me know, please. Email simon.rugby.news@gmail.com. I hope you liked what you heard, found it useful, and you want more. And if you did, others will too. So share the news and spread the word by sharing the Facebook posts and telling your friends about Rugby News, or one word. Any ideas to make it better, of course, let me know. After all, it is your town, your people. Reach me on email simon.rugby.news@gmail.com. Okay, I've been Simon. Goodbye.